What's up, witches, and welcome to Witch Space. I'm Gemini.
And I'm Scorpio. And today, well, we have the third unofficial member of Witch Space Podcast, which is Monica Bordurski. We love having Monica back, and she's back. So, hey, Monica.
Hey. Hi, Nori. How are you doing? And how are you doing, Gemini? How's life treating both of you?
Better now that you're here.
So happy to be back. And really, I'm happy to be considered part of your team unofficially. So thank you for having me.
Always.
100%.
Yeah, always welcome to come back. And we have exciting news from Monica. People hopefully already know or are aware, but she's got a new deck, The Awakening Tarot. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. Plus whatever other silliness comes into our brains that we want to talk about. So
I think the first thing we have to talk about is that we don't post the videos of like these calls, but Monica has perfectly set up the Awakening Tarot like right behind her shoulder. I'm going to steal a screenshot of this and post it to Instagram because it's like the perfect little, like you have put so much thought into this and we're like, literally, we just started recording like, oh, it's right behind me. It's perfectly placed right behind my shoulder. If you see the picture.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I was like,
so that's smart.
Really, yeah, that was smart.
Why, thanks. It's just perpetually hanging out behind me. Oh, is that my deck there placed behind me? Hello.
I just didn't see it there.
So let's jump in, I guess.
Yeah.
Talk about it because Monica was kind enough to send us a copy so we could look at it. Do you call it a copy? It's not a book.
Well, it is a book.
Yeah, there is a book with it, but I'm just saying, like, is that what you... Like send us a deck.
Yeah. Copy. Generally, I say send a review copy. Yeah.
Okay. I was just wondering if there was like another term. And you know, one thing about this deck that I don't know why I was surprised because it's not like it's the first time you've done this. The book again that goes with it. It's not like, you know, it's just a little informational book. Like it's a great book, but you want to read this on its own.
Oh, thank you so much. And yet when I create these books, I think, is it enough, really?
And see, this is my first question for you, Monica. How do you do this? How do you make a 78 card art deck, right? All of these are artworks, beautiful pictures, beautiful images, and then write a book with it. Because it's you've written a book. That's a book. You could sell that book separately. There are some decks that do that where they're like, you have to buy the book separately. Like you could do that and I would understand. Yeah. And then also you made 78 art pictures. How?
Well, you see, I don't know. I think I just went to another planet while I was doing it. I'm kidding. It was a little out of body there for a moment. But, you know, because this is the third book and deck, only the second tarot for 78 cards. But the first one was in 2020 with the Shadowland Tarot. And it was a pretty hefty book, and I honestly didn't think I'd live through it because I had never written and drawn something on a tight deadline to that extent. So I had to just really plan things out and do a little witchcraft to stay in that calm space, call in the ancestors, the troops, and really just sit down and work every day. And I realized that, gosh, I feel very privileged and honored to be able to do this, which totally takes the edge off of it. Mm-hmm. And I left enough time to review it a few times. And I also had other eyes on it, which was a real big help. And just thought, that's okay. I know this stuff because I've been reading tarot for over 40 years. So when you're familiar with something to this extent, it is a little easier. That doesn't mean I think they were great, but it means I could get through everything. You just have to do all the things, right? Pep talks, calm down, ambient music, you know? Mm-hmm. But it works. It works. As long as you stick to that and you keep seeing your progress. Like, it's difficult when you're on card number 3 of 78. Mm-hmm. And you're going, yay, me, only 75 to go. But, you know, or when you're on page 5 of like 300, you're going, oh, yippee, almost there. Not quite. But you have to stay positive for sure. It's a mindset. It can be a total mind game, and you just keep giving yourself those pep talks.
I want to know how this deck came about because we've said the title, but we haven't really talked about what it is. And it's an elemental tarot, right? So I guess I'm not even thinking about that so much, but I guess that's like another question. Yeah, let's start with that one. And then I have another question. So where did the idea come from saying, okay, I'm going to do the elements?
You know, it's, oh my goodness. Many years ago, well, not like decades, but I would say at least a decade ago, I was teaching at university, and I decided that I would be a little out of the closet with my practice, and I would create the syllabus in the elements. So rather than blocking off each section, by topic alone, I did it by elements: earth, air, fire, water, and spirit. And it went really well because that's just so much a part of me and my practice. And from that, I created a residency on Taronto Island, also known as Tacaronto Island in the indigenous language here. It's a Haudenosaunee language. And I created that program thinking I'd like to combine earth-based spirituality, which encompasses pagan, witch, Wicca, any kind of indigenous earth-based spiritualities with creativity, because they're often segmented, they're compartmentalized, and the two shall never meet for some reason. I thought I'm gonna have people pull this together and get in touch with the environment. And when we do that, we become better stewards, I think, of our space. It's both looking within and outside of ourselves and integrating. And so that's where that name Awakening came from. And it was also, it's a programmed residency for a week, and it's also in the form of the elements. So each day an element is discussed, and explorations and discussions are happening with that, and truly understanding mind, body, and spirit with each element. So we cover a lot. It's a very complex and layered kind of a deal. After having done that for about 7 years, I thought, you know, people have asked when they've come on this residency. By the way, it is an international residency, and I've had participants from all over the world. I've been very fortunate. So there's been a real diversity of thought and opinion and questions that come into this residency. And the one thing that I've been asked most frequently is there a study guide apart from, you know, a syllabus that everyone gets to keep and the notes? Do you have some other tool for us to work with the elements? And I thought, you know, I think it's time. I'm going to create a tarot deck from this. So things just keep expanding and growing from that. And awakening, you know, that's what it is. It's just becoming very aware. So that was my long-winded way of giving you the you know, basically how it came to be.
Okay, I just thought of more questions, but I'm gonna go in the order that I was thinking about them originally. The art or the writing? In other words, did you have the cards not drawn out, but ideas for all of them? Or was it more like as you drew, you were like, you know what? This is really giving me the vibe of, and then it became like a fixed card.
Yeah, I stopped to think about the theme and consistency because that is something that can be challenging when you're designing a deck. If you have them in each suit, along with wanting them to stay consistent, not through style so much, but in their actual look. So I thought, you know, this is about becoming one with your environment. So I thought I would create these beings that were either interacting with the elements or actually morphed and part of those elements, depending on what stage of growth you were at. So I did a lot of sketching and a lot of thinking about that because I understood intellectually what this was way before I thought about it visually in 78 cards. So it took a little bit of sketching and working out in the first few, which is normal for me. I don't know if other artists do that or designers, but the first few were like, yeah, that's not working. And just like, that's not getting the point across, because it's vital that in each illustration that you create, each piece of art, you are also staying true to the symbolic iconography and archetypes of each card. So again, it's very nuanced and complex in a way that it can take a little bit of figuring, but I like doing that. My sketchbook has got just as many words as thumbnail sketches. So it is kind of how I work. It's my sweet spot.
So when you were thinking about creating this deck, or when you were starting to create this deck, I know you mentioned the residency, but for somebody who hasn't been to the residency, how do you see them interacting with this deck? In other words, we're all hoarders. We all have a million decks. Okay. But I'm going to tell people they need this deck. Like, I know what I have in mind, but I want to know what the intention was. You know, how do you see people using this deck?
I see people using it as an effective tool for divination, as well as self-development, and a way to access realms you might not normally, spiritual realms. I think I want the readers to really see themselves as being empowered and agents of change in their own awakening. And so I'm hoping that without in any way imposing my points of view, just offering teachings on earth, air, fire, water, spirit, and having elemental guides, people will access information that they hadn't before. And that is in itself a form of awakening. There are things in the book discussing the environment and how you can help the environment and our responsibility to the environment, because we've kind of messed it up. So how can we live sustainably for ourselves? That includes self-care as well as our environment. So when you awaken, I really think that you find your life's purpose. I mean, I know that sounds a little lofty, but when you're truly awake and aware, that is when you understand both your limitations and your potential. So I'm hoping that is how people will use the deck. And honestly, if people just like it for the artwork, I'm good with that. But as a designer and a trained designer, as well as an artist, it is my intention to make tools for several purposes.
What I really liked about it is, and I guess I'm going to speak for myself, somebody who, I'm not going outside unless the weather is perfect. Like, I'm just gonna, you know, if it's too cold, I'm not going outside. If it's too hot, I'm not going outside. You know, and as witches, we always want to connect with the elements. We always want to be in nature. And I feel like this deck is so wonderful to have when, even if you can be outside, but you're not outside. It's such a wonderful way to connect. And I thought that was really good. Also, for people who have, and this is something I want to know, your style. I think you can tell when it's a Monica production, but they're so different. I feel like every deck is so different. And I think that, I don't know if it's hard for artists, because usually artists don't do that. Like, you pick something up and you go, oh yes, this looks just like blah, 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 blah. And I feel like that's not the case here. And when it comes to this deck, I felt, and these are not words that I use often, I felt warm. I felt good. There's something about, not that I felt bad, you know, I own all of everything you've done. I own and I use, and I feel great with it. But there's something about this that, and that's why I kind of felt like it's a connection. Yes, it's divination, but I was just thinking for witches to use for themselves as a connection tool, as a meditative tool, because the beings that you have created for each card they're lovely, they're warm. You want to be friends with them. They're weird. I mean, I'm not going to say that they're not, some of them aren't weird, but not in the Shadowland sense, right? It's a very different type of thing. I don't know if you got that, Gemini, if that makes sense. Like, did you feel that?
No, I 100%. First of all, Hi, guys. We're going to have a moment. There is something about opening Monica's decks. And I don't know if it's because I like know you, right? Or what, but they're just palpable. And I know that I said that about the charm casting deck, where I was like, I feel this, like I felt it in a way that I regularly don't feel. And I am a deck hoarder. So like, I have a lot of decks that I'm testing out here, but you open it. And like, this is going to be Scorpio's deck, right? Like I am reviewing it as well. I'm looking at it, but like, it's going back to her house because she'll kill me if I keep it. But I can still, it's like, I can feel how much energy is in it. And I'm like, on the one hand, it's so jealous. And on the other hand, so impressed. And I think that one, like, it's a testament to you, Monica, the way that you create these things. But like, yeah, this one is like weird cozy. Like, I want to later, I want to talk about the chariot sort of character, because the vibes, but later, because what I want to talk about first, and I kind of want to like come to the same point that Scorpio was at, is the first thing I want to ask is like, how does it feel? Right? Because you talk about starting the residency in like 2015 in your book, and you're going to be coming up on 10 years. This will be year 9, 2025 will be 10 years. Like, how does it feel to be birthing your residency in a new form, to be creating and like putting the elements out in this new form?
Yeah, it feels really good. It feels like, I don't know, as an artist and somebody who's done a lot of different things for jobs, a lot of things were disconnected. So this feels really good. It feels as though everything I've been doing for quite a while now is just from one single seed that just keeps growing and producing fruit, and not in a redundant way, but a genuinely expanding way. So I feel really good about it. You know, of course, it wasn't even out when I jumped into the next project, because that's just how I roll. But I did pause to look at it, and I felt really good that it was out there. I mean, I don't really stop to think about how things are going to be received, because, you know, that could make you a little uptight. I just felt good that it is out there, and I'm sure going to find its own legs and homes. So I feel really good about it.
I love that every time we have you on the podcast, you're like, oh, and there's another project coming. Like, oh, teaser, there's another one. Like, what? Do you sleep?
Yes, I do, actually. Ow. I do sleep. I actually have a life. Well, I don't know. I think I have two settings, which is go and stop. You know, I mean, yeah. I don't have a lot of middle ground there. So when I'm moving towards something and working on something, I guess I do work fairly quickly. And when I'm not, I just really take breaks, and I'm actually very good at taking short breaks. Sadly, that's something that I kind of acquired during many, many years of caregiving for family members. And, you know, it was a very difficult time. But I think anyone who is in that kind of situation realizes of extended caregiving that, you know, and I'm sure parents as well, that if you only have 5 minutes, you really cram a lot into that and make the most of it. So I'm really good at, you know, just taking a really deep but short break and then getting back to it.
I am very jealous of that. Talking about sort of coming out of your caregiving and moving into your art process, the first thing you say in the booklet is about the idea of a spiritual awakening. And I wanted to know if you would share a little bit about your process with that, you know, your history through spiritual awakenings, bringing you to the point where you make this deck. Where did you start and how did you awaken?
Oh my goodness. I think that, I don't know if this is for other people as well, but from what I hear, we all have many awakenings. I think throughout our lives, we just keep, I guess, what people call leveling up. And that is a process for many of us of just becoming more and more aware of our environment, of community, of ourselves. We've done shadow work. I mean, when I'm talking about continuation, even though this deck looks remarkably different, I think, than from the Shadowland Tarot, that was the shadow work, and this is now your awakening. Like, there is a sequence there. For myself, I kind of, this sounds peculiar, but it's just part of our family history. I was kind of born awake, and I slammed all those doors and windows shut for a while. So while that sounds a little cryptic, let me just say that our family has a history of being incredibly intuitive to the point of it being a little disturbing. So we have to learn as we grow what not to share with people to freak them out, how to tell spirits to stand back when you need space, and how to not freak out when you have certain dreams that are somewhat prophetic. So you learn to deal with that. So it's a process for me of kind of going to sleep first and then reawakening when I learned how to work with elements and perhaps understand my own energy and the energy of others a little bit better. And I think that happens for many different reasons. We go through stages in our life where we travel, we have certain jobs, we meet certain people. I've been very, very fortunate in my life that I will just run into people who say these profound things and then I'll never see them again. And, you know, you're just going, what was that? You know, I remember when I was at the Native Canadian Center of Toronto, I was volunteering many, many years ago. It was like 1991. And I didn't know anyone in the community. I just popped in to do a little volunteer work. It was close to a rehearsal space we used to have. I used to play in a band. And I went in there and this woman walked up to me, and she was probably a good 30, 40 years older than I was. And she walked up to me and she looked at me and she said, you know, your gifts are going to get a lot stronger as you get older, so you might want to get a handle on them now. And then she walked off. And I'm thinking like, oh, thank you. Who are you? And I've had a lot of that. That was, to me, a moment of awakening. Like receiving that message, being open enough to receive that message. It changed the way I looked at things, because often when we're younger, we are wondering, you know, oh, why did that happen to me? Me, me. This is not what I thought. I just thought this woman knew things and I'm going to pay attention. And so that was an awakening. Other awakenings occurred after I lost family members. Sometimes you're in such stressful situations that you sort of awaken. I also have pretty much died a couple of times, but we don't need to get into that. Literally, once was in a very bad car accident when I was 5. And another time I was just having a really horrific asthma attack and nobody knew I even had asthma, including myself. So, you know, those things, they take you to another place. And so I just see myself as having such a series of awakenings where you've learned something about yourself and others, and then you're awake to other energies and other knowledge. So, you know, that's a few of them. There's probably about 10 or 20 more, and we don't have time. But those are some of the highlights.
I am not going to ask you more about that, but I want to. So we might have to come back and do just a history of the Monica Bodersky awakenings. Like, that might have to be its own episode. Because that's a lot, and that's intense. And that makes sense to me why then you would be able to so like innately channel this kind of the awakening energy into being able to create something that other people can use and have. And I feel like this next question, like the segue, not great, but we're going to do it anyway. Coming from this series of awakenings that you've had, both intense and slightly less intense, How does it change your relationship with the elements? Do you have the same conception of the elements now putting out this deck that you did when you started your witchcraft practice in the first place?
I think so. I think this is, in a way, echoing my own experience of when I began my practice of studying and observing and being, basically an observer of elements, to transforming that into embracing that energy and becoming the elements at different times. So rather than just calling fire, the element of fire, for some energy I might need for something, I take that element into myself and become that fire and embrace that passion for what I'm doing in my intention. So it's just brought a different way of working with my practice by becoming those elements and calling on them and then embracing them, channeling them. It's a very different feeling.
I want to tangent a little bit, because I want us to talk about the cards, because they're beautiful and they're amazing and you're crazy. But before we talk about it, I want to ask you about these German porcelain dolls. The theme of this episode is how did you find them? Why do you have them? Like, that's, it's such a strange inspiration. It's not something that I ever would have thought of, and yet it works so perfectly. Like, how do these things happen to you?
Well, you know, being an artist, I used to do these mixed media shadow boxes. Everything in my life was about shadows. And I created these. And this is quite a long, long time ago. I think it was on eBay. I noticed that there was this rather unusual dude, whose name shall not be shared, who was digging up old porcelain factory doll rejects in Germany. And he was selling lots of them, you know, and they were kind of broken, most of them dirty, missing limbs. And I went, why, they're gorgeous. Because that's just how I find these things. And I thought, oh my gosh, and they're all from 1870 to 1890. And he just dug up a whole ton of them, because what they did with those rejects was they just throw them out back and bury them, porcelain, figuring at some point in a million years, they'll just disintegrate. But they hadn't at all. They were very well preserved, and they were factory seconds, because Germany was very well known for making porcelain dolls and then painting them. So they all come out very plain, with no paint, nothing on them. And then they move through the factory and get painted as little statuette-like objects and or jointed dolls that get little wigs and things. So I bought some because I was so intrigued by them. And I've had them for a while. And I just thought, you know, these, how do I take a person, like what person am I going to have moving into elements? Like what human? Were I need some generic being. And quite honestly, these strange little dolls are very generic beings. And so I thought they're kind of precious. They survived everything. They've been in the earth. It just, in my mind, this made some kind of logical sense to use them as models for, you know, incorporating with each of the elements. So that's how those little porcelain folks came about. I still have several of them.
I love the way that your journey is sort of like you tell us little bits and pieces of your story every time you're on the podcast. And it's like, I'm Sherlock Holmes a little bit. And I'm like, I have to put the pieces together. Where was Monica? What was she doing? How did this happen? but you do get that sense of like, it's, and not necessarily, I don't want to say like the everyman, right? I'm not looking at these cards and being like, oh, this could be anybody, but I am looking at these cards and being like, this could be anybody. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. No, that didn't make any sense.
Well, oddly enough, that made total sense to me somehow. this is why we all get along. I think I didn't want it to be so generic. I wanted it to be inclusive, but it was a good jumping off point for inclusivity was to have kind of a blank slate human being before, you know, some of these cards, and other cards will look like people in your life. There are thinner, you know, beings, and I don't call them people. I say beings because they're kind of magical. Quite frankly, they're not people. They've become one with the environment, but they're different shades, different sizes, different probably perceptions of gender, even though I see them as pretty much genderless. But that's because magical beings to me are very genderless. And I think that's inclusive by nature. It's not something I wanted to force, like, oh, I'd better be diverse and inclusive. No, it's just the way I look at things, I think.
Yeah, I think that comes through, and I appreciate that you understood my shenanigans words there. I love, and Scorpio, feel free to jump in, I love the way you do the suits. I love the way that you discuss each element at the beginning of sort of the chapter on the suits, with a little introduction story, with keywords and manifestations and meditations and spells and exercises and reflection questions. It's the tool of the book is almost more important to me than the tool of the deck, because it is so, this is a big book. This is a big, useful book. And I love seeing the way you approach the different concepts that go with the deck, the different concepts that go with tarot in general, and really elaborate on it for people to be able to, like, okay, well, if keywords work for you, good. If an exercise works for you, good. Here's reflection questions. Here's this. Inclusivity to you is baked into what you're doing. Like, the deck doesn't function without it being inclusive.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad that came across. And I think because I certainly learn in different ways, I want to ensure that if I'm sharing something, I'm sharing it in a multifaceted way, so that you can pick and choose. And the thing with the reflection questions for me has always been, it's a collaboration. I may be suggesting with my advice and my messages and keywords, but once you take those reflection questions and really consider them, I think then you're bringing your point of view across to what that card means. You're personalizing it. And then instead of me just telling you what the card is, it's become collaborative, which to me is also really critical.
So I'm going to say something about the deck that I want to know, Gemini, if you got this vibe. If you notice in the beginning, I called them creatures. What surprised me about this deck is that I felt that they were alive. I felt like when I was looking at each card, that they were communicating with me. And I know that people say, well, isn't that what happens with every deck? Like, you know, you get like intuition. Yeah, I understand that. No, I feel like, and I don't think I've ever had this experience with a deck where I felt like if you pay attention to the decks, they will talk to you too. They're alive.
100%. 100%. There's a little owl bear. Justice is like a bear with the two. Yep. That's my best friend. We're best friends now. See, I've interacted with that spirit for 13 seconds. That's my best friend.
Okay. I'm really glad that you felt that way, because I'm like, do I say this? Are people going to think that I'm absolutely out of my mind? But yeah, you do feel like you have like a bunch of friends there and with their own personalities. And I think by going through a lot of the steps that Monica has outlined in the book, you're going to get to know them, and then they're going to open up and you'll get to know them. I think everyone will have their best friends and, you know, everybody who works with the deck, I mean, and you'll be able to have different connections to different elements or just different cards. And I think that's really special. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing, I think this is the kind of thing, you know, when we say we should have to come back and talk about Monica's like phases. Yeah. I think we need to come back and after we've worked with this deck, what's it like in a year from now? Right? Who's your friend?
Well, Scorpio, who's your best friend? And Monica, who's your best friend?
I don't have a best friend. I'm waiting. I'm not going to jump into a relationship.
Okay, but let's say if you had to pick one right now, who would your best friend be?
No, I'm not saying it at all.
Text me.
But I will tell you this, it's an earth one. I know.
I love it.
But it's so weird for me.
No, right? I get it.
It seems so water everything. So it's like, no, it's an earth card. But we'll see. Yeah.
All right, Monica, who's your best friend?
Okay, well, because I like them all as beings, I don't want to make any of them jealous because they do have their own little spirits, you know that. I think the one that's affected me the most, who maybe speaks the loudest, is the balance card, which is also on the box, which is the chariot equivalent. Yeah, that one really speaks to me.
Monica, tell me about this card, please. Walk me through this. Walk me through your journey, because my relationship with this card and your relationship with this card, I'm sure are going to be different. But it is the card that when I looked at the box and when I looked at the deck, I was like, I want to know what she was thinking. I want her to tell me about this card.
You know, that's very interesting too, that, you know, what was I thinking? Often I'm not thinking, I am feeling and I'm going to another space and I am accessing energies. Sometimes I don't even know what I'm going to sketch. I admire artists who, you know, really plan everything out and they've got this idea and they work it out and they go, I see them on YouTube videos ripping through pages and scratching it out and crumbling it up like you see on writers' tropes. And I don't really know. I just start with this idea and let the pencil start going. And if anything, I quit thinking to allow that to emerge. And I start with the idea. So what is, you know, the chariot to me? I understand the card as very much a moving forward and in effect leveling up and going on a journey. But also about balance, because in the traditional Waite-Smith deck, you'll see that there are generally two creatures, maybe black and white, and potentially going in different directions. So that is the charioteer. It is very difficult to have two creatures running and make sure that they are going together so that you don't get pulled off track. This is where the idea of balance in the charioteer comes to me. And I thought, well, if you are the chariot, if you are incorporating that balance, but it's tricky, this is where the two wheels came from on this being. And also because of the spirituality, and I guess because of my own witchcraft background, the beehive is really important, the hive mind, literally. This is where the beehive chapeau came from. It's, you know, keeping in mind the community and that you are on your own journey, understood, but you still are part of a group and what that looks like. You know, snakes to me are always very sacred. They are about perpetual, you know, they are about things that you are constantly growing and shedding skin. And so that is why this being is wearing that snake. That growth is always there. And that's kind of what I was thinking in the expression. Well, a lot of people, I don't know if I told you this before with the Shadowland Tarot, but I had somebody, you know, email me and give me a lot of grief about the Shadowland Tarot saying, you know, I just want you to know that your cards are very disturbing. I've got a Sharpie and I'm putting pupils in every single blank eye. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm giving somebody nightmares. The blank eye on a lot of my beings is because they're seeing beyond the physical realm and into the spiritual realm. So that's how all those elements came together. They're sort of a passive or very, I guess, maybe determined look on the face of this being. And like they have a direction in mind. And to me, that's incorporating all of the keywords and ideas of the chariot.
There is a thing, and I'm not an artist, so I don't remember the terminology, but in sort of like ancient Greek sculpture, where they would create a sculpture that was like just on the precipice of moving. So it's a stationary sculpture, but like you could see that they might be about to do something. And that's kind of the vibe that your chariot card gives me, is like, I don't know if that being is moving, but they sure could be. They sure are about to be. So it has this very, and like, I think that might be part of my, like, I have a very visceral reaction to this chariot card, because it's very much, it feels, I think, the way you want the chariot to feel, in that something's about to happen. You can move forward, like, you can, boom, we're going, whoop, we're going. And for me, I don't know that I feel tarot cards as viscerally as I have looking through this deck and working with this deck. So as much as it's like, what were you thinking when you did this? It's so interesting to hear you talk about the way that these images come together in the cards, because I don't know that I ever would have thought of that. But when I hold the card, I'm like, oh yeah, I feel it.
Wow, well, that's really nice to hear. Visceral reaction. I guess I don't usually think about how people are going to react. I'm so focused on wanting to assist and include everything that would be helpful. I can't be very objective about the look of my art. I have to be honest. Some people say it's horrifying. Other people say it's warm and cozy. And I guess that's just a reflection of how people are, you know, how they are and their individuality. So it's interesting to hear you say that. I think a lot of these beings, I see them, you know, in spirit realms. I've met them in dreams. They seem very familiar to me. And just like sculptors often say, they're just releasing, you know, whatever is in the stone or whatever they're creating in clay. I feel that way too when I sit down with a sketchbook or with paper and I'm working on an oracle, that they're just, they're coming through, they're communicating with me, which I find, you know, a very exciting process.
What process are you doing or did you do with this deck? Because we did talk about the way you made the art for your charm casting deck. Was there something special that you were doing to make it easier to interact with the beings, the spirits? Was it because of your time with the residency that you had already sort of been working with them? What about your actual process made them come through, do you think, so strongly?
I think I surround myself with the each element. I did surround myself. I mean, I always do as part of my spiritual practice, but in particular for each of the elements. During the earth element, I had a lot of, you know, I have plants. I have a million plants in our home, and stones, rocks. I pulled out a lot of those and the crystals, and I was holding them. And I think I just naturally communicate or pick up on the energies of those things. I think I've mentioned before that I use certain types of water in my watercolor, and also the paints, a lot of them are earth-based pigments. Some of the watercolors I use are actually from crushed rocks. So I have kyanite pigment and tiger's eye pigment. So some of that earth pigment is coming through. And when I was working with the water element, I certainly had a lot of water around me and in containers, and a lot of, you know, thought about emotion and listening to very emotional music, I think, in the background. So each of the elements certainly is present. The other, you know, interesting thing is not just working with the elements, they make their presence known. You know, I happen to be working on the air element, and I do them in sequence, by the way. I just have to be kind of linear and rein in my circular thought patterns for this, or I wouldn't get through. But when I was working on the air element, you know, I'm paying attention to my perceptions. I also had the window open and the wind would just pick up, and feathers in my room would blow around, and I'd be thinking, you know, it's making its presence known. I could feel the air. And with the fire element, you know, nothing burned down literally, but I did have a lot of candles burning, and working with fire and having small fires in our backyard and in our cauldron. And I think just focusing on them. The other thing with the water element too is moon water. I mean, I use moon water in my painting. And you know, paper is part of that, the earth. It's just, you really become aware as well of everything. You know, the bristles on my brush are synthetic. I don't generally like to use squirrels and other little critters, but you just become hyper aware of your environment, I think, and what each element is, and where it is, where it's situated, how it's affecting you, and a lot of dreams too during that time. It's kind of like you're this open receptor, you know, and you're just getting all of this information, and then you download that into your artwork, and it can be a bit exhausting at times. And that is generally my process. It was just a little different than Shadowland and other things because of each element and my practice. It was nice because it brought my spiritual practice right to the forefront, more so maybe than the other decks.
Was there any element that gave you a hard time, like they were just being a pain?
A pain. I think the elements that probably, the element that gave me a lot of pushback was probably the earth element. And I'm not sure why. I generally consider myself relatively grounded. But I found that it did give me a little bit of a push. I didn't, you know, the water element for me, going through the emotional things can be a little tricky. Fire, I am a fire element in my sign, so I didn't find that difficult at all. And I didn't find the major arcana or the trumps difficult. But yeah, I think the earth element really was challenging, you know, to look at security and physicality and what grounding is, what that means. I had to really slow down for that. And that was the first element I worked on. So, you know, and like the earth and the wisdom and the rocks, I don't know, it seemed literally heavy. So I think it was like, I don't know, mining.
But literally, right? Like, but literally mining. I'm having a lot of emotions as we do this. And one of the things that I have come back to as we have this conversation is that this is a testament to your practice. And when an audience member listens to this, because I'm listening to it, I'm having the same experience of like, wow, I want this for me. I want to be able to relate this strongly to the elements. I want to be able to feel this aware and feel this connected. And I think, you know, I love that you write a book when you do a deck, because I think you talk about it in the book. And I think you've shared about it on the podcast here, that you didn't just wake up and this is how your entire life has been the whole time, that there have been these awakenings. There has been this building connection. You are constantly doing the work, as we talk about constantly on the podcast. And so it's almost like you're giving people the opportunity to get what we want, which is the experience that you're having. And it's like a guiding hand being like, hey, you have to do a little bit of work, but you also can be connected to all of the elements. You also can have the spiritual awakening that you're looking for. Here are the tools that you can use. And it doesn't feel, sometimes when that happens, it feels difficult, or it feels like condescending, or it feels like, you know, you're never going to achieve that. But when you pick up this deck, it feels achievable. And when you talk to you, it feels achievable. It feels like you're just like, hey, I got you, girl, here you go, right? Like, I have your back. And that's so powerful. And I think that that's what a witch is kind of looking for and looking to be, right? Like, I guess my culmination of witchcraft would be something like this. And it's so nice to not only like get to touch it, but to get to talk to you about the process that went into it and see you as both having reached that pinnacle and also being a totally reasonable, nerdy person who is like willing to talk about and share that.
Thank you. That's really nice to hear, because you know that is how I would have liked it to come across. So it's really nice to hear that kind of feedback, that you feel that it isn't. I think too frequently, if we're trying to share things, they do come across as condescending. And I never want to give people the impression that this is the only way. This is an approach. It isn't the approach. It is just one of many. And like I've said to people when I was teaching at university, is just give it a try. If it doesn't work, that's fine. It's worked for me. But I never want to be that person who says this is the way to do something with a large echo behind it. It's just a suggestion. And I am you know, I am humbled by your comments. I appreciate it very much.
So tell me, is the initiate of Earth, they're a little gossip, aren't they? Like they have all the tea, right? Am I wrong? I feel no. Like they have all the tea. And like, if they think you're cool, like you'll get the tea too, but they got the tea on everybody else.
This is true. This is very true. The initiate of Earth does. They know what's going on. They got it in their hand. They got what growth is all about and how to, you know, how to get there. And they may or may not share it with you, but it's an interesting space because they're also learning, but they kind of got a little jump on some of the other initiates. Yes, that's very true because they are a student. It is the equivalent of the Pentacles. And I think a lot of us understand the Page of Pentacles as being a very good student and very sharp. So yeah, you got that right. They got the tea.
They got the tea. You see it in the face. That's what I'm saying. They're alive. So for anybody who's feeling like, I think this is too much, I don't know, especially like if you're starting out and you're like, oh, I don't know if I can approach this. This is so approachable. Like, I feel like Monica knows exactly what we need, from the Shadowland
to 100%. The deck
to this. It's like, I didn't even know I needed this in my life. And now I'm like, oh my God, now we all need this.
No, yeah, Monica writes decks specifically so that I will look at myself in the mirror and go, shit. Shit.
How did you know?
Seriously, like, no, but how do you know, Monica? How do you know?
I have this drone that flies over your home. Okay. And it's recording all of the things you mutter in your sleep.
That would make so much sense.
I am glad that you think that. I hope that it's hitting that part of a lot of people. You know, I'm sure there are some who will say, I don't get it at all. You know, I have, and that's fine. That's excellent. It's just not the deck for them. But I'm really happy to hear that, you know, I'm making decks that are certainly speaking to you and that you're resonating with.
I am just waiting to be like, tell me about the other deck. So
okay, yeah. Can you talk about the next thing?
Tell me about the other deck.
Well, the other deck is, it's going to be a Lenormand deck. And it's going to be looking at some very chilling tales. it's a little, get your creepy on. It's not your standard Lenormand deck. Each image is going to be a little on the creepy side, and I'm just letting that loose, people. And it's about chilling tales. So my take on that is I understand Lenormand to have cards that are positive, neutral, and negative. And I'm saying, you know what? This whole deck's going to creep you out. And it's about stories. You know, where did cautionary tales come from? What are our deepest fears? We're taking a dive into some of the fears that we have. And I hope that you're not just going to look at these cards and go, I don't like it. I'm hoping you're going to go, okay, so that really creeped me out. And then read about it in yet another book in which I say, hey, did you know there's a legend of Sasquatch, for instance, that is really common, is are these our deepest, darkest fears in the woods, you know, or are these cautionary tales from some very wise Indigenous people to keep us from dying? You know, I want us to look at the things face on, head on, that go bump in the night and in the daytime, by the way. So that is just a very quick synopsis of that deck. So yes, I'm working on that at the moment.
So are these real tales, like from around the world? Okay.
Yeah, and some of them are my personal experiences, because, you know, just to add to my life story, because hey, why not? I grew up in a very haunted home, and I've lived in some very spooky places. So, you know, a lot of my fascination, other people are going, but she seems so nice, is because of the experiences that I've had being kind of sensitive to that sort of thing. And so some of the stories that are going to be included are very brief little tales, sort of micro fiction, some micro nonfiction, accompanying each card. And I think I'd like people to just, like I said, look at their fears and face them, and maybe think about how some things are there to protect you, and how some things are not so scary once you really think about it. You know, that's just how I am. Just face those suckers head on.
Monica, when is this deck releasing so that I have time to prepare myself emotionally?
You got lots of time to prepare. Probably about a year from now, I would imagine. So, you know, not to worry too much. There's a little room there for some preparation.
I've got a year. Understood.
Oh, I want it now. I want
this. This is the Scorpio deck, 100%.
By Samhain.
You know, I tried to be gentle with shadow work, okay? But this is what is provoking, and what inspired this deck is post-pandemic. We became aware of vulnerabilities that we never had. We're in North America, we're relatively privileged, relatively. There are a lot of people who obviously are not. But to the people who were just going to work every day and living those middle class lives, a complete lockdown and the entire world shutting down, your flights shutting down, don't even leave the house. We were in complete lockdown and under curfew. That could be quite horrifying. I think it rattled a lot of people, myself included, because, well, gosh, I have an active imagination. So could anarchy be far behind? I didn't stop at lockdown and food shortages. It went to complete global chaos in my mind. And we did not know what this was. We're kind of glib about it now because we have vaccines and we're used to it. It's turning more into an annual flu-like virus. But at the time, it was quite horrific, and it brought up a lot of fears in me. And I thought, well, if it did for me, probably it did for a lot of other people. So let's take a look at some of these fears and talk about them as part of the healing process. That is how I think about these things. So yeah, there are a lot of things that we're afraid of, but a lot of things make us feel vulnerable. Things we can't see, things we don't understand. Those prey upon our insecurities. You know, so I won't say the word that you just did, Scorpio, but that creature that you were discussing is something beyond our abilities to either comprehend or to fight. And how much more vulnerable can you feel? This carries on for disease, infections, certain animals that, you know, might attack for no reason. You know, bears can be some of the most frightening creatures to people because they lack certain facial muscles. So they don't have the ability to snarl before they attack. So their attack can just seem like one minute they're just going, and the next they're charging. So we have so many fears. It's just about our vulnerabilities. And whether you're living in a really huge urban center and it's the dark alleyway, or whether you're going into the deep, dark forest and you have no light, you know, there are things, the sounds in the middle of the night. I think it's also why I love horror movies, not cheap slasher films, really good gothic tales of horror and fright that take you on a journey to your subconscious, and you look at those fears from a safe distance, and then the movie's over and you're okay. You still got your popcorn in your lap and you're okay. You know, those are safe scares. It's why we like to go into fun houses or certain rides at carnivals. We kind of enjoy that safe scare. I mean, I'm not the kind to jump, with a bungee rope or out of an airplane. Those to me don't constitute safe scares, but you know, for some people they do. We won't get into serotonin levels and dopamine right now, but I'm just happy to get home in the evening or, you know, from a walk somewhere. So though all of those fears, and we've become so aware. Look, we have the internet, like you just said, Scorpio, TikTok, look anywhere, you know, look these things up. We never used to have access to every disease on the planet, every kind of legend, every kind of ghost story and paranormal haunting and, you know, creepy things that people have found in the walls of their homes. Like, we didn't know, you know, and we were blissfully unaware. And so now I think it's a time to say, okay, let's tackle some of this, use these cards and take a look at where they originated and maybe how they are archetypal as well. They aren't necessarily true. They're there to keep us safe in some circumstances, and our understanding of fear, I think, helps lessen fear.
Monica, I know that you have had a number of jobs and I stupidly have not memorized them. Have you ever been a therapist?
Just a tarot reader who's read a lot of books on psychology.
Okay, here's your new title. You're a spiritual therapist, because that's what's happening right now. This is, hey guys, if you can't afford therapy, just buy Monica's decks, because that's where we're at.
You know, being a teacher and having been a mentor, you do learn a fair bit, you know, and I have taken psychology courses and I am very big into Jungian psychology and archetypes. I think you just pull all of this together after a certain number of years and you start to see things from a broader perspective of how we all share a lot of these insecurities and vulnerabilities.
You know, you were talking about the fears that we have, especially after the pandemic, and you are so right. I don't think any of us really thought that what happened was going to happen the way it happened. Like, nobody was expecting that. And it kind of reminds me of, for people in the US, 9/11. You know, there were people who wanted to talk about it. There were people who felt frozen afterwards. There were people who, but we just kept moving on. We never examined it, right? Even though people were living with fears. It took me I still don't watch anything on the news, but I'm okay at work. But it took me forever to like have people discussing 9/11 around me and going, I don't want to discuss this. I don't want to even go near it. And I think the pandemic, you see it in your neighbors. I've seen people like lose their minds over the dumbest things and like just acting completely irrationally. And I just think people aren't processing it. We're just told, just keep going, go back to work. Just do your life. Just go out. What's the problem? What's the problem? We all lost about 2 years of our lives, and a lot of us were terrified, right? And a lot of it was TikTok as well. You saw nurses, you saw people talking about people being intubated. Like, you were terrified. You just thought, like, that's it. Like, it's going to be me, or it's going to be, anyway. So yeah, I just think all of this is so needed to be able to look at ourselves. And if we can't actually say the words to process it, there are tools and there are ways to help us. And I love scary movies, including slasher films, because they're funny.
They are. I used to, watch them all the time. I just got bored with them because they became so predictable. You know, these people are having sex. They're going to get killed. I mean, you know, it's like camp. Uh-oh. You know, you might as well just fill in the blank there. But yeah, they can be funny too. And they do speak to us on a very different level. And you're right. I don't think people are processing the trauma. I think for some reason, people are still afraid to say they've been traumatized because it makes them weak. And right. I'm saying, like, oh no, It makes you normal in my books and strong. It takes a strong person to say, yes, I was absolutely terrified. That was life altering. I washed every grocery. I, you know, had a mask on inside the house. I was wondering where we could go if we had to flee. I wondered if we'd have food when I went to our grocery store and there was nothing on the shelves. And it was just, you have to understand that even to a lesser degree, a post-traumatic stress can occur and leave us with, as you're saying, Scorpio, people who are irritable. I mean, that is also a symptom of grief and healing. You get irrational. You know, I've noticed road rage is amped up something incredibly around here. And people are anxious to get on with it, like they're trying to catch up with those 2 years, but they're bypassing the entire thought process that they're traumatized. And so many places have closed. Our city is covered in graffiti. The homeless situation, the opioid crisis, like people are not acknowledging the aftermath of this. So, you know, that's a lot of talk, isn't it? Just about an upcoming deck on fear. But there you have it. Here I go down the trail. If you want to reel me back in at any time.
That's the problem, is we don't. Right? No. The problem is you come on and we're like, oh, let's talk about everything. That yes, continue, please. Is there anything else that you want us to cover before we start wrapping up? Is there anything that you like definitely want to talk about the deck?
I think we've covered everything. I hope that people feel that they could give this deck a try to become empowered and their own agents of change, that they're self-reliant and that they can do something about the environmental crisis. They can do something about creating their own coping mechanisms, perhaps rather than numbing down in other ways, in a very addictive or perhaps unhealthy ways. And that goes for everything. I'm not talking about substance use. I'm talking about everything that we get addicted to that may not be healthy for us. I hope this deck is an alternative and people give it a try. And I think that's about it.
It's beautiful and we obviously love it. Yes. And hopefully, having listened to this conversation, our audience will also give it a chance and love it as well. Thank you so much, Monica, for just for existing. Thank you for being a member of our coven. Thank you for being the unofficial third member of the podcast. We love you.
Oh, thank you. The feeling's mutual. Thank you so much for having me as kind of your unofficial extra here. I've enjoyed speaking with you. You always have such thoughtful and insightful questions and perspectives. And I really, really enjoy speaking with both of you. And I always want to thank your audience for listening as well. So thank you. Thank you.
Oh, we should plug one thing.
Yes, we should.
Reader Studio. Monica's going to be at Reader Studio. Do you want to tell people what that is? It's in New York. So before people go, oh my God, where it's don't go to Canada for it. It's in New York.
Yes, it is actually in New York City, right by LaGuardia Airport. It's the Marriott and it is called Reader Studio. And I missed it so much when we couldn't travel during the pandemic. This is the first time I'll be seeing my New York tarot friends, and people come from all over the world and from all over the US and Canada to gather, talk about tarot and divination. There's wonderful speakers. I know that Sasha Graham is going to be delivering one of the workshops, and also Liz Dean, who did the Game of Thrones tarot. There's some wonderful people there, and also vendors. You know, you really get your fix. Oh my gosh, if you're addicted to tarot decks, you're just going to want to come in with a wad of cash, because the all of the publishers are generally there with all of the latest decks. And I will also be vending and bringing some of my prints and some of my smaller self-published decks. And I'm giving an author's showcase talk about the Awakening Tarot on Saturday. in one of the rooms for about an hour, and I can't wait to share with people. So if you are there, come for the weekend. It actually starts on Thursday and goes right through to Sunday. So give it a shout. Take a look at it on the internet and see if you're interested in registering. I think you still can. It's just a wonderful space. And by the way, I'm going to be in Amy Zerner. I don't know if you know Amy Zerner and Monty Farber. Amy Zerner is this incredible textile artist, and she makes clothing, and my goodness, this woman is amazing. She's like created designs for Michelle Obama. She's just like the most amazing person. And I'm going to be in her fashion show on Saturday night at the banquet. So, you know, hopefully I don't trip. So come on down and, you know, we'll see you there.
So now we can add model to her career.
Yes, spiritual therapist, model, deck creator, artist.
Is there anything else you have coming up that you want to tell people about, they should be looking for, like any other events that you're doing? Or
In Elora, if you're in Ontario, this is in about an hour or so north of Toronto. It's the Magic Salon. I will be there with Nancy Hendrickson and Erica Robinson and Marilyn Shannon, who does the Kingston Tarot and Lenormand Conference. It is created by Shelley Carter, who has done a lot of witchcraft and tarot work herself. And, you know, that should be a wonderful 2 days. That's May 11th and 12th. I'm also going to do the Oddities and Curiosities traveling show, which I think, Scorpio, you have attended before. There is one in Toronto this year, June 15th and 16th. So I will be there selling some of my odd wares, including some, I think, props from the television series American Gods, from the book by Neil Gaiman. I have a few of those props, so I'll be selling those there along with my tarot deck. So if you're in Toronto, please come to that show. And of course, the Awakening Residency at Toronto Island is happening again this year from June 23rd to July 2nd.
Thank you again, Monica, for joining us, for always having wonderful things to say, for always bringing exactly the deck that we need. Thank you, of course, to our audience for making things like this possible. Thank you to Kano and Moore for our intro and outro music. And remember, if you're following the moons,
you're following us.